ओम नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्या नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जायमुदीरये नष्टप्रयेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया। भागवत्युत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 10, The Departure of Lord Krishna for Dwarka. And this is text number 6. Someone can say what page it's on. Page 11. Narayo Vyadaya Klesha. Narayo vyadaya klesha, daiva bhutat mahetavaha, ajata shatrav bhavayan, ajata shatrav abhavan, ajata shatrav abhavan, Jantu nam rajnikari chit, Jantu nam rajnikari chit, Narayo vyadayo klesha, Daiva bhutat mahetavaha, Ajata shatra bhavavan, Jantu nam rajnikari chit, Narayo vyadayo klesha, Narayo vyadaya klesha, Daiva bhutat mahetavaha, Ajata shatra bhavavan, Jantu nam rajnikari chit, Narayo vyadaya klesha, Daiva bhutat mahetavaha, Ajata shatra bhavan, Jantu nam rajnikari chit, Narayo vyadaya klesha, Daiva bhutat mahetavaha, Ajata shatra bhavavan, Jantu nam rajnikari chit. Nadayo vyadaya klesha, Daiva bhutat mahetavaha, Jatra Shatra Bhavavan, Jantu Nam Rajnikari Chit, Nathayo Vyadaya Klesha, Daiva Bhutat Mahetavaha, Jatra Shatra Bhavavan, Jantu Nam Rajnikari Chit. Narayo vyadaya klesha, Daiva bhutat mahetavaha, Ajata shatra bhavavan, Jantu nam rajnikari che. Na, never. Adayaha, anxieties. Vyadayaha, diseases. Klesha, Trouble due to excessive heat and cold.
Daivabhuta
atma. All due to the body.
Supernatural power.
And other living beings.
Hetavaha.
Due to the cause of.
Jata
Shatrao.
Unto the one who has no enemy.
Abhavan.
Happened.
Jantunam.
Of the living beings.
Rajni.
Unto the king.
Karichit.
At any time.
Translation.
Because of the king's having no enemy,
the living beings
were not
at any time
disturbed by mental
agonies,
diseases, or
excessive heat
or cold.
Translation
by His Divine Grace
Srila Prabhupada.
To be
nonviolent to human
beings and
to be a killer or
enemy of the
poor animals is
Satan's philosophy.
In this
age, there is
enmity toward
poor animals,
and therefore
the poor creatures
are always
anxious.
The reaction
of the poor animals
is being forced
on human society,
and therefore
there is always the
strain of cold
and hot wars
between men,
individually,
collectively, and
nationally.
At the time
of Maharaj Yudhisthira,
there were no
different
nations,
although there
were different subordinate
states.
The whole world
was united, and
the supreme head,
being a trained king
like Yudhisthira,
kept all the
inhabitants free from
anxiety,
diseases,
and excessive heat and
cold.
They were
not only
economically
well-to-do,
but also
physically fit
and undisturbed by
supernatural
power, by
enmity
from other
living beings,
and by disturbances
of bodily and
mental agonies.
There is a
proverb in Bengali
that a bad king
spoils the kingdom
and a bad
housewife spoils the
family.
This truth
is applicable here
also.
Because the
king was pious and
obedient to the
Lord and sages,
because
he was no one's
enemy,
and because he was a
recognized agent
of the Lord,
and therefore
protected by him,
all
the citizens under the
king's protection
were, so to speak,
directly
protected
by the Lord
and his authorized
agents.
Unless one
is pious and
recognized by the
Lord, he
cannot make others
happy
who are under his
care.
There is full
cooperation
between
man and
God and man and
nature,
and this
conscious cooperation
between
man and God and
man and nature,
as
exemplified by
King Yudhisthira,
can bring
about happiness,
peace, and
prosperity in the
world. The
attitude of
exploiting one another,
the custom
of the day,
will only bring
misery.
May we please
chant the Mangala
Charana prayers
before
we discuss this verse.
It begins
on
page number
10.
And
just as a
reminder,
there are
a few extra
prayers
which
go on
past page
15,
and there's
a flip-out
page,
and it's on the back
of the page that
you'll find the
continuation.
Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmanatandena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Ahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Parakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Sadvatutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhanvitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Sri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschata Deshatarine Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Tinamine Sri Barshabana Videvi Dayataya Kripabdaye Krishna Sambandha Vigyana Dayane Prabhave Namaha Madhuryo Jwala Premadya Sri Rupa Nuga Bhaktida Shri Gaura Karuna Shakti Vigrahaya Namostute Namaste Gauravani Sri Murtaye Dinatarine Rupa Nuga Virudhapa Siddhanta Dvanta Harine Namo Gaura Kishoraya Sakshad Vairagya Murtaye Vipra Lambara Sambode Padambu Jayate Namaha Namo Bhakti Vinodaya Sakchidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanuga Varayate Gaura Virbhava Bhomestram Nirdesa Sajanapriya Vaishnava Sarva Bhoma Sri Jagannathayate Namaha Vanchakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Mahavaranyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaura Twise Namaha Panchatadvatmakam Krishnam Bhaktarupa Swarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakyam Namami Bhaktashaktikam He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Jayatam Surato Pangor Mama Manda Matergati Matsarva Swapadambojo Radha Manana Mohano Divya Vrindaranya Kalpa Drumadha Srimad Ratnangara Sinhasanasto Srimad Radha Srila Govinda Devo Preshtali Bisevya Manusmarami Sriman Rasha Rasharambi Vamshivata Tatastitaha Karshan Venu Swanir Gopir Gopinata Sriestunaha Takanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavanishvare Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Dai Tosi Devai Priyai Keshavasyacha Vishnu Bhakti Pradidevi Satyavatai Namo Namaha Jai Narasingha Jai Jai Narasingha Pralada Desha Jaya Padma Mukha Padma Bringa Matsamo Nasipa Padma Naparadi Chakashana Parihare Pilajami Kimbruve Purushottama Yuvati Nam Yata Yuni Yunam Cha Yuvatau Yata Mano Piramate Tadvan Mano Me Ramatan Twayi Bhumau Skalita Padanam Bhumireva Valambanam Twayi Jata Paradanam Twameva Sharanam Prabho Govinda Balabe Radhe Prateye Tomaham Sada Twadiyam Iti Janatu Govindo Mam Twayasaha Radhe Vrindavanadishe Karunamrita Vahani Kripaya Nijapadabja Dasyam Mayam Pratiyatam De Nanda Vrajastrinam Padarenum Abhikshnasaha Yasam Hari Kato Gitam Punati Bhavanatriyam Namasrestam Manamapi Shachiputram Atrasarupam Si Rupam Tasya Gajam Maruparim Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivamaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Sri Gurum Tam Natosmi Aradhana Sridam Dante Idam Jache Puna Puna Srimad Rupa Padamboja Rajohamsyam Bhave Bhave Hantaya Majur Abala Haridasya Varyo Yadrama Krishna Chananashvarasha Pramoda Manam Tanoti Sahago Ganayostayo Yat Paniya Suyavasakannanakanna Mulai Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Narayo Vyadaya Klesha Daiva Bhuta Mahetava Ajata Shatra Bhabavan Jantunam Rajnikari Chit. Because of the kings having no enemy, the living beings were not at any time disturbed by mental agonies, diseases, or excessive heat or cold. Maybe everyone can move up just a little bit. 6.75 inches. That there is a correspondence between the activities of the leaders of society and the members of society and their connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and how the environment is then formed and how nature reacts is something that requires a little bit of insight. The modern society, I noticed, for instance, on the airplane when I was just flying back from Washington, D.C., a few days ago, that every flight that goes over America or from one place to another, even from here to Los Angeles, the people on the plane end up filling up a plastic bag full of plastic cups, gigantic bag full of garbage. And many of the lakes and streams are polluted wherever you go. There are unintended consequences from many of the chemicals that have been used to get rid of pests, for instance. Many of them are kinds of chemicals that invented by really, really smart scientists who figure out how to make a chemical that will disallow insects from reproducing. Only problem is they found out recently that it also works on humans. And as the bumper sticker of the devotee who comes to my house to help me with the garden sometimes, it says, we all live downstream. Everyone lives downstream because we're all in the same closed environment. And there's a correlation between the consciousness of the people and how the environment is flourishing or not flourishing. And not just from an external point of view, but also there's a correlation because it belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When we say nature, then you say, who's nature? And that nature belongs to the Supreme Lord. And he's controlling it. And in the prayers of Queen Kunti, she says, Neyam sobishtate tatra yate dhanam gadadhara yat pada ankita bhati swalakshana vilakshitai. She notes that while Krishna is present, he's walking everywhere and he's putting his footprints. And when we look at the footprints of Krishna, you'll see different auspicious markings like a thunderbolt and a goad for driving elephants, a barley corn. Did I say thunderbolt? Yes, I did. What else? A chakra, a flag, an umbrella, conch shell. And what? A lotus flower, yes. And so these markings are there. And she's saying that because you're placing your feet here, our kingdom has become beautiful. Ima jana parasridha supakaushari virudaha vanadri yadnyadanvanto hiranti tavavikshitai. And she names all of the natural bodies of the natural bodies that are nearby, the towns and villages, and the trees and the rivers and the mountains, and she says that they're all flourishing because of your glance over them. Because of your glancing over them, they're flourishing. They're very happy. In Vrindavan, when Krishna and Balaram are walking through the forest, all of the trees and creepers bow down to Krishna. And they produce beautiful scents. And they trees give honey and all kinds of natural gifts they're offering to Krishna, bowing down before him. And he interacts with each one of them. And also, so do the gopis, incidentally. When they're looking for Krishna, they ask all of the various entities of the forest, have you seen Krishna? Did he go this way? They're all personified. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Mayadyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunanena konteya jagadviparivartate. He says that by my glance, I'm causing everything. I cause everything in creation just by my glance. Mayadyakshena, just by his seeing everything. It becomes enlivened. It's manifest through his power. And it's moving because of him. And we heard earlier, when we were hearing from the Sri Brahma Samhita, that the formula for living successfully in this world is given succinctly in two verses, Isavasyam idam sarvam yat kincha jagatyam jagat tena tyaktena punjita magridha kasisudhanam. And that first verse is to understand that there is a supreme controller and that everything is owned by him. It's all his property. And that if one only takes what one's quota is, naturally, through the laws of nature, by the arrangement of the Lord, then the next verse says, Kurvan evi ha karmani jijiva shekshatam sama evam twai nanyate tosti na karma lipitare. There'll be no averse karma to such a person. And they can go on living for hundreds of years without any reaction, living peacefully in the world. So this verse is recounting a time when Maharaj Yudhishthira was the king, the emperor of the world. There are many states, but everyone was united under the king. And he was Dharmaraj. He was following Dharma perfectly. And therefore, all of the people were following in lockstep with Yudhishthira. And this was pleasing to Krishna. And therefore, because of it, nature, which is Krishna's nature, was also perfectly in harmony. So much so that, what is it? Anuvritti? There's two things. One is too much rain, and the other one's too little rain. This tends to happen when nature is out of balance, that there's either too much rain and there's flooding, or there's a drought, like we're having now in California. Today, not considered. But that happens, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, as a result of being out of harmony with God. And that's the problem in the world, that there's a demoniac mentality, which Krishna describes in four parts in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita. Namam duskritina muda, prapadyante naradama, maya aprita jnana, asuram bhavam ashrita. He describes four kinds of demoniac mentalities. Duskriti. Duskriti means, kriti means that you're expert at something, that you can actually do something that's apparently progressive. When you put du in front of it, it means you're really good at it, but it's for a bad purpose. So this is, he's describing duskritina, which means this demoniac mentality, which is out of sync with the desire of the Supreme Lord. And we've become, arguably in modern society, very expert at doing many, many types of things. I remember standing in the St. Louis airport and watching the planes come in. I was talking to a friend, Mark and Dea, and I was saying, what does it take to build an airplane, to build a jet? I was wondering if I could ever build one. And I thought, probably not. How much it takes to build one jet plane, what to speak of one freeway system, all of these things are undoubtedly marvelous creations that have taken almost a mystic kind of power to build. In fact, in some places, including the Nectar of Devotion, Srila Prabhupada has mentioned that there are different mystic powers that someone can develop through Ashtanga yoga and other kinds of internal practices by connecting one's mind to the different powers and elements in the universe. One can actually harness them and exhibit wonderful powers, like making something that's heavy lighter, or oneself becoming very light or tiny or large, or being able to reach out and grab things. Like Prabhupada talks about how he had a friend at school whose guru was some mystic yogi, and would say, you know, what kind of fruit do you want today? And they'd say, pomegranate. And then he'd make pomegranate manifest in the kitchen all of a sudden. He's had some power like that. But Prabhupada mentions how through all the modern types of advancements, we've actually been able to reproduce these kinds of mystic potencies and powers. Like if you want to go, you can go anywhere in the world right now that you want. Or you can get anything you want. Prapti Siddhi means you can get anything you want from any place in the world at any time. Can you do that? Yes, you can. Just go on the internet and order it next day air. And it'll be there at your porch. You have to pay extra, but hey, you know, so do you when you develop mystic powers. You got to do a little tapasya. But if you go on the internet and you tell them you want it tomorrow, and you pay enough, you'll get it tomorrow, anywhere in the world. Istanbul, I want some Turkish figs. And they'll be there sitting at your front door via FedEx the next day. It's some kind of mystic power. You know, we've invested in our modern society energy into this kind of I want this, I want that, and manipulating the energies. This is called duskriti, namam duskriti namuda. And so there are different kinds of duskritis and demoniac kinds of mentalities. Krishna names a mudha, and a mudha is somebody, it's an entity, an ass. The donkey works very hard for very little. And in fact, you can trick a donkey into thinking that he's working for a good cause by hanging some grass in front of him. Because all day long he'll go after the grass, thinking that if I just work hard enough, I'll get that little clump of grass. But he doesn't notice that there's grass growing on each side of the road. So the mudha is like that, forgets that God's providing through nature already, that everything's coming automatically, but due to the influence of the mode of ignorance, the mudha thinks, I'll work very hard to get this little clump of grass. Work very hard, I'll get my one japati from my master who will feed me. But you can be fed anywhere. You don't have to go to a master to be fed. God's feeding the squirrels and the elephants too. In fact, speaking of kingdoms and how opulent they were compared to today's society, now did you know when you fly they charge you if you don't have some status on a particular airline, they charge you $15 for the first bag you check in and $25 for the second. And if you're overweight by 1 pound, then they charge you some astronomical fee. Gokul Hari smiling. Did they do that to you on the way over here? You bring your surfboard, they'll charge you $100 just to put it on. So it used to be everything was free. They give you free meals. But now everything charge for this. In Hastinapur, when the Pandavas were present, why do you think they called it Hastinapur? Well, because all the Hastis. The Hastis are everywhere. You know what it costs to feed an elephant? You can feed a dog, and it's kind of expensive. People spend a huge amount of money, billions and billions of dollars every year in America feeding dogs. But if you have an elephant, you'll go out of business. He'll eat you out of house and home if you try to have a pet elephant in your backyard. But in Hastinapur, they had thousands of elephants. Elephants were everywhere. That's why they called Hastinapur. That's the opulence of a kingdom. They could keep elephants, and it was no problem because nature was providing. Everything was there. There was an opulence in society that's not there now. We're losing it because nature is restricting, pulling back. This happened. This is there's in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Prithu Maharaj appeared, Mother Nature, who was personified in the form of a cow, refused to give anything. She was holding back. She wouldn't give opulence, and she wouldn't give abundant grains or fruits or vegetables or anything else because the people had stopped performing sacrifice. And because of that, she was restricting. And this is the law of nature. When you, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, when you perform sacrifice, then automatically the demigods are pleased and everyone's taken care of. But the Duskritis, they try to independently make the kingdom of God in this world without God. Just like Ravana. Apparently, it's said that he also wanted to find a route, like a stairway, to the heavenly planets so that everyone could just go there without performing any tapasya. This is demoniac. This is the demoniac mentality to try to enjoy without going through the proper process, as mentioned in the Vedas, in the Bhagavad Gita. So, namam duskritino mudha prapadyante naradama. So the Naradama means the lowest of mankind, and there are different descriptions. Maya apritajnana means that some people, some societies become very expert at certain kinds of knowledge, like technology, for example, or even science, or even they study Vedic science. But because they have a demoniac spirit, they don't actually want to surrender to God, they want to enjoy themselves, their knowledge is stolen away. They don't get the essence of it. They don't understand the real purpose of it. Namam duskritino mudha prapadyante naradama maya pritagyana asuram bhavamasrita. These asuras, this asuric mentality Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita, that mogasha moga karmano moga jnana vichetasa rakshasim asurim chaiva prakritim mohinam shritaha. Because people take shelter of demoniac mentality, therefore their fruit of activities, their hopes for liberation, their cultivation of knowledge, it's all baffled. They don't get anywhere. So this is the great secret of life, is actually simply to take shelter of God and to perform activities that are pleasing to Him in the Ishavasya spirit, and then everything flourishes. Then there's natural abundance provided through Krishna's nature, and everyone can live happily. And this purport is very timely, actually, because people are realizing now that we've overtaxed the world in a mad rush to enjoy so-called material happiness, which means to have a house with a big refrigerator and a car and not just a little house, but a huge house where, you know, you have some land and you can heat the house in the wintertime and you can, heat it in the winter and cool it in the summer and have unnatural kind of life. Or comfortable life. For the sake of that, there's been a mad rush all over the world for this so-called happiness, and we've exploited all over the world the resources. Forests are being cut down. Even here in California, when I was out walking one day, actually Radhanath Maharaj and I were there, walked through the Redwood Forest, and there was a ranger speaking about the history of the forest there, so we stopped to listen to him, and he was saying how there used to be millions of acres, practically, and now there's just a small portion left over, maybe 10,000 acres or something like that. I forget the exact numbers, but it's a tiny, tiny portion that's left over. The trees were all cut down. This is happening all over the world. Trees are being cut down, And in the name of material enjoyment, it's being exploited. So it's caused a problem in the world. And people are suffering because of it. And also, I need to mention the threefold miseries, because Prabhupada brings this up in this context, that built into nature, no matter how hard I try to find a comfortable situation here, I'll always be harassed by the three kinds of miseries, the kleshas. Those caused by other living beings, those caused by my own body and mind, and those caused by the demigods, adibhautik, adidaivik, and adiatmik. So these kinds of miseries are constantly going on in the material world, but they're reduced when one lives a Krishna-conscious lifestyle, a simple lifestyle, and is dedicating one's activities to the Lord. Otherwise, if I try to adjust my situation so that I'll be happy here, I'll be sorely disappointed. So to sum up, first thing is, we should accept this point, that the world that we live in now is called Dukkhalayam, and it's meant for suffering. It is a place of suffering. So the hope that I'm going to find some kind of adjusted lifestyle to avoid the threefold miseries is not possible. That makes life easier just to start with, if I accept that it's a place of suffering, that I can't find a place here that where ultimately I'll become happy. And it's a shashvatam. It's also temporary. So then the second point is that everything belongs to Krishna, everything belongs to God, and if I use it in that way, in his service, then automatically my life will become balanced, because we are parts and parcel of Krishna. And if we take care of Krishna, automatically we're taken care of. Just like when you feed the stomach, automatically the limbs are happy. So these two things. Don't try to adjust the picture, because ultimately, it's a place of misery, the material world. And second is, dedicate all activities and all resources as much as possible to Krishna, then we'll automatically feel satisfied. Just by feeding Krishna, we'll also feel satisfied. By giving everything to Krishna and using in his service, we'll feel satisfied too. So these are very timely principles. People are looking for answers and turning to the greening of America and topics of ecology and things like this. It was popular in the 60s too, but it's back now by popular demand. So we can present these things while we're talking about Bhagavad Gita and giving people this information that happiness is not a product of modern technological advancement or opulence, so-called opulence, or having many, many things, but it's really based on the Ishavasya spirit and accepting that this life is temporary and that we're meant to cultivate God consciousness and go back to Godhead at that time. So we could take the example of Maharaj Yudhisthira and see how opulent things are when Krishna is present. By his footprints, by his presence, by the presence of the holy name, everything becomes happy and opulent. I see in households where there's Krishna consciousness, where the devotees live in a household where they center their life around chanting and the deity. Lord Chaitanya told the devotees in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, I've come to give two things. He said, Sankirtan and the bliss of deity worship. These two things I've come to give. So if you have that in your home, you can live anywhere. If you have that Sankirtan in your house and the bliss of deity worship, then you'll not want for anything. The house will be happy, kids will be happy, your refrigerator will be full all the time, because the goddess of fortune will live there. That's one householder wrote to Prabhupada early on, was thinking, because it was a tricky thing. Most people in the beginning of the movement, they just give up everything and then they join the movement. And there was not a lot to think about then. You just go through the program and everyone would contribute to the community and then you'd be fed and everything was fine. But then some devotees, little by little, wanted to become householders and live outside. Either because they came as householders. In fact, even some householders moved in the temple with everybody. There was some arrangement like that. But there were it was a rare thing. People would become householders. Some temples had more than others. And then devotees wanted to know, how should I live? And one devotee was especially concerned how to make money and to support my family. So Prabhupada wrote back to him and he said, Lakshmi is always there with Narayan. So if you worship Narayan properly, then you'll never have to even think about Lakshmi. She'll automatically be there. So this is our formula. Just worship Narayan properly. And then Lakshmi will always be there. And I've always seen it. In the homes of devotees who are performing Sankirtan, means they're dedicating all their activities for the glorification of the Lord. That's their mentality. And they have a deity. They worship the deity in the temple. That's their main focus, is how to give to the deity. And if they live far from the temple, then they also have a little deity in their home. And they give their attention, their activity, their house. They dedicate their house to the deity. It's not that we keep a deity in the house and then when it's convenient, because we want to do something else or enjoy, then we close the doors. Okay, he's not here anymore. Now we can do what we like. No, not like that. When we come in the house, we should think, this house belongs to the deity. All the food belongs to the deity. All my money belongs to the deity, and I should use it in the deity's service. And if you plan around that, then how you build your house, how you plant your garden, everything, when you're thinking how to take care of the deity, then you'll be properly aligned. So like when you make a garden in your house, you should think, what are the best kinds of things to plant so they can offer them to the deity? Then you can see who's doing service out there in the yard. And if they're not, you can replace them. So this is the actual principle of happiness in life, is to stay close to Krishna at all times, and then we'll become happy. And that is the principle in a household, it's the principle in our personal life, it's a principle in a kingdom. Anywhere you go, it applies, because Krishna is all-pervading, and he's always the supreme, and everyone's always his servant. And if we act in that principle, then we'll be happy. And we should teach it to others also by our example, and by precept also, by distributing this knowledge so that people can understand how to adjust their lives in such a way that they're happy and they get the center of all creation, which is Krishna. Because also there's a way people try to adjust their lives in the mode of goodness as well and think, well, if I just become a vegan, then I'll become happier. But as Prabhupada points out in the Nectar of Instruction, you can be a vegan and eat, sprouts, and what else do you eat? And tofu? What do you guys eat? No, just kidding. There's all kinds of things to eat if you're a vegan, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's not sinful, Prabhupada said, because if you still don't have the Ishavasya spirit, if you're a vegan, and you think that these things are for my enjoyment, and you eat all those things, you're still eating sin, and you're still killing. Bean sprouts are living beings. So, better offer them to Krishna. It's still considered, although it's a little bit higher, it's still considered a demoniac lifestyle unless one's offering it to Krishna. In fact, we're not vegetarians. We are not vegetarians. Huh? We're only vegetarians by default. And Prabhupada also taught like this. When people would speak about vegetarianism, he would say, we're not vegetarians. We eat what we offer to Krishna. And Krishna doesn't take non-vegetarian things. Therefore, we eat the things Krishna takes, so we're really not vegetarians, because monkeys and pigeons and, you know, different kinds of animals are also vegetarians, but they may not be spiritually advanced. It doesn't necessarily correlate. So our principle is, as Prabhupada wrote on one of his documents when he was coming into the country one time, they asked for your religion, he said, Krishnite. And so I heard the other day, he said another term like that, because someone asked about Hinduism, and Prabhupada said, we're into Krishnaism. Not Hinduism. What is a Hind anyway? I don't know. Hinduism. Yeah, Hindu. Is it what? An accepted term? Subset of Vaishnavism is Krishnaism. So we're Krishnites. We're Krishnites. We're Krishnus. But the point is, keep Krishna in the center, then you'll always be in the right place, and we can take that to Goloka Vrindavan. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Any last points? Or lasting points? Yes.
So we're hearing that there should be a head of government should be an authorized, trained agent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But we see that people fight, you know, people are fighting over who is the real, representative of God. You know, some Taliban may say, oh, it's Mullah Omar or this kind of person. You know, some people may say Sarah Palin she's a representative of God. She's a religious person or something. We need to have a religious head of state. How do we know who is authorized to actually be the head of state and who is really trained as to act properly as an agent of God in controlling state affairs?
Well, in the standard process that you understand who's a devotee also. And if you look at the standard scriptures all over the world and understand what is the essence, what is the gold standard of all those scriptures, then you can find out a basic principle. And that gold standard is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that devotional service is ahaitukiya pratyata, dharma protita kaitavo tra paramo nimat saranam satam. There's no cheating in this process. Devotees aren't asking God for something. It's unalloyed, pure devotional service. And any sincere, intelligent person can understand that. When we were in Japan a couple of years ago, we went to the Govinda's restaurant. It was a tiny little restaurant. And I had, on the way there, picked up a couple of Watchtower magazines just to see what the Jehovah's Witnesses are saying these days. And while we were in the restaurant, I was talking to Satyadev about different sects of Christianity and which ones were easier to get along with than others. And I happened to be talking to him in that restaurant about how Jehovah's Witnesses tended to be more fanatical and how they generally had a very sort of closed society and they didn't accept all kinds of other people. Anyway, when the restaurant started to clear out, the temple president, Madhu Mangal, who also runs the restaurant, came over and said he'd like to introduce us to somebody. So there was a gentleman there with a suit and tie, and he said, he's a regular, he comes in all the time, he's become our friend. He said, he's a Jehovah's Witness. So the man started speaking to us, and one of the first things he said, that he was reading these books, Prabhupada's books, and he said, the first thing I noticed was that, he said, this is genuine. He said, you don't have any motive for worshiping God. He said, I've noticed that the only real purpose is a pure devotion to God. There's no motive. You're not asking for anything. There's no ritualism and things like that. The essence of it is to wake up pure love for God. There was much more to the conversation there, but he was a sincere kind of person, very interested, and he could understand that principle. And that's the gold standard of what that is. And one must be following a standard shastra that is giving this kind of process. And there is a way to understand who's authorized and who isn't authorized. It's a scientific process, but one must take the standard books of knowledge to understand it and honestly assess it through not just the shastra, but also through the authorized personalities who are following it. It comes to a question of authorization. And someone might say, well, who's authorized? We'll never know who's authorized, and therefore, you know, none of it's any good. This is what Krishna calls in the Bhagavad Gita, krodha, anger. Vitaraga baya krodha. Because krodha means that because there are so many conflicting views and ideas about what the standard of religion is, therefore I say none of them are any good. And therefore I'll take to intoxication instead to get my transcendence. Well, this is what happens. They have to, because they can't find a standard authorized process and take shelter there, they have to take shelter in the three modes of material nature. But there is a standard authorized process, just as in science there's a standard authorized process for understanding at what temperature water boils. And you may challenge it and say, at what temperature does water boil? Prove it. And I'll bring in a thermometer and I'll show that it boils at 212 degrees. And then the person will challenge me and say, prove that's a real thermometer. And then I'll bring in a testing kit for the thermometer, and I show that it's a real thermometer, and say, prove that's a real thermometer testing kit. And then you get into infinite regress. So at some point there's an authority, there's an authoritative source. And in the Vedic process, we have the Mahajans. The Mahajans represent the basic principles of religion and are the prominent members, representatives of those principles that we have. And they correlate with what the teachings are and in the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. And so you look at the Mahajans, what is their path? And you also look for yourself, what is written there in the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. And then you can ascertain also through parampara that there's a living representative who heard from another and can represent and say, yes, this is the process. And then one can follow properly. If you don't have those things, then and everyone's taking it up on an individual basis, then you do get, of course, all kinds of renegade entities speaking in the name of religion. And again, out of egalitarianism, someone may say, well, yeah, but they're all the same, they're all good because it's all religion. But no, there are actual qualities and standards, and one has to be vigilant to judge what those are according to the standard books of knowledge and see, are they following? Even the Muslims, for instance, the Taliban may say that we are the ones following the actual process, but even scholarly Muslims who are looking at the standard books like the Quran, Islam means submission. That's what the name means. And in their own Shastra, there's no justification for massively slaughtering people, especially Muslims. They're also being killed by their campaign. Is it authorized? Of course not. Whereas if you look at the Shastras, like Srimad Bhagavatam and the Vedic Shastras, even in warfare, there's a certain protocol and a way to do things that is a dharmic. So one can judge what's a higher and lower principle. And therefore, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, you have to go by Shastra and follow this process, and you have to judge. That's what human life is meant for. It's discrimination. Okay. Yes, Rakshi Prabhu.
Saying along those lines, there should be therefore common universal principles that you mentioned from Shastra that then need to be communicated so that other religions would see eye to eye with it. One of the issues presently is that religions are fighting among themselves and unable to accept the truths that are there in their respective religions. We have in Vaishnavism such strong principles, then they ought to be recognized universally as those that would be applicable to everyone in order to attain spiritual enlightenment. I think what happens is that it gets lost with other religions in that they put it aside that this is a sect or Hinduism or something coming from the East. But what gets buried there is the aspects that you mentioned, is that there can be universality of this which would be applicable everywhere, and yeah, that it would have to be brought
up. If you listen to Prabhupada's teachings to many, many kinds of people, and he spent time, in fact, I remember in 1976 in the airport, we were in the airport, National Airport, it was before Dulles was built, Prabhupada was at the temple, and we used to meet people at the airport, and we'd bring them back to Prabhupada. And there was this one author, he had written a book about how we're meant to go to other planets because we're like, that's the only way to keep life alive because we're like seed pods and we have to like spread our seeds all throughout the universe so that we can survive and such. So we met him at the airport and they brought him back to talk to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada talked to him for about an hour or so. And he had written a book, this guy, all about this theory. And he was going on and on and on. My point was, Prabhupada talked to all kinds of people. And he had so much patience for it. But in those conversations, he emphasized very universal principles. He didn't get bogged down in these the details of these that tend to confuse people about the differences in religion. But, for instance, dehi no smin yata dehe, komaran yovaram jara, that we're changing our body. This is a universal principle from boyhood to youth to old age, and then we have to leave the body at the time of death. It's logical that you had a future when you were a kid, you had a future when you're a young adult, and you had a future. Now you have a future when you're an old man. What is that future? It depends on your consciousness. And Prabhupada stuck with universal principles like mrityu sarva harascha hum. There's a law that everyone has to die. Who made that law? So, yes, teaching on the basis of these very basic principles is quite effective, because otherwise you get quagmired in all kinds of, you know, cultural considerations and ritual and things like that. Yes.
With all due respect, actually, you know, for me to follow any philosophy, there needs to be a foundation of a humanity. If that is broken, then nothing matters what you teach. For example, he mentioned about, gave example of Sarah Palin, if I'm pronouncing the name right. She has ordered shooting down wolves through the helicopters. That means she can cover the entire states. So she, being a Christian also, she was very popular in USA, and all Christians went for her. It didn't matter what Christianity teaches. If it did not even follow this basic humanity that I learned on my own, not through any religion, just from a personal experience, to killing her, that shook me up to the core, knowing that a governor of a state is ordering, you know, killing off native species, which were part of the land before Europeans or anyone arrived, or she or her ancestor arrived. If she has not followed that, and still people, I don't know, she may be following Christianity, but I just don't know that when that basic thing of humanity, even from the child and old age, just by observation, just by personal experience, has not been followed, and still people followed her just because she also follows Bible, then it just, the base wasn't there. I like Krishna consciousness because there is a base of humanity just by its nature, as you explained about the vegetarianism, because Krishna, so there is some association that automatically brought that. So what you teach makes sense to me, and I get very impressed and go flow with it, because there is a foundation of humanity, general humanity, which by being human, that the way we understand, then everything else makes sense to me. So I just don't know why that basis, that actually surprises me when, this was one example, and when the Proposition 2 passed in California, and Human Society showed all this slaughterhouses and the conditions of the animals while they are living. This was over and over on TV in Proposition 2. And people who go to church and stuff, they see the suffering, for example, of Jesus Christ, how much he's suffering. You know, people are beating him, chaining him. But I don't know why they are not following the same humanity level, that they are actually chopping the animal, literally eating the flesh. And so that basic, you know, foundation, even in that case, didn't meet. And this was very recent about seeing. So what they teach on top of that with Bible or any, it just wouldn't make sense to me, because the foundation of humanity wasn't met in both cases. So, anyway.
Thank you. Casey.
The universal principles of all religions are written on one's heart, and every religion says this as far as their scriptures go. And unfortunately, there's corruption in every religion, including Vaishnavism. There's people that don't follow the path correctly, and that's due to their heart not being purified correctly. And what Vaishnavism gives through the Hare Krishna mantra, I find, that's different, is a process for purifying your heart. And while all the religions might give the same principles, they don't give as clear of a process or as an effective of a process for attaining that. So yeah, I'm also unclear on why there's more corruption in the widespread religions, but I think that's probably the reason. So there's not like a good, you know, bit of bhakti process.
Thank you. Last point, Akarna.
Just responding to what he was saying about humanity, I just like the first sentence of this purport, that to be nonviolent to human beings and to be a killer or enemy of the poor animals is Satan's philosophy. And we see that, you know, the authorized representative, King Yudhishthir, had no enemies at all, not even the animals. In fact, he was able to take care of all the citizens, even the animals, so that they didn't experience any anxiety. And I guess you're talking about universal principles. That's a real test. Who can actually do that? Who can actually bring about that situation where everyone is not experiencing anxiety and they're properly engaged in making spiritual progress in life according to their position and so forth? And Prabhupada often, when he talked to Christians, the point he often made was vegetarianism, just to keep it at that simple level rather than getting off into theological discussion. Often,
if you can't pass that test, why go any further, basically?
And he said command of Jesus, you know, when he said, thou shalt not kill. What are the two most important commandments? Don't kill and don't steal. Don't kill means don't kill animals, too. And they would say, oh, we think it means something different. But no, it means don't kill. They're alive. You can't deny that the animals are alive. And when you're taking their life to eat them, you're killing them, you know.
Thank you very much. Yes, Deepak.
Prabhuji, the purport in Gita, I think in 7:16 I was reading and there Prabhupada was saying, devotees who are unsuccessful, they take birth in right families. And then he gave the example of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur as also for him, saying that, you know, we will go back to Godhead and, you know, we have internal relationship. So my question I was thinking was senior people like you, when you were reading, because all those texts were out, when you were reading that and you were interacting with Prabhupada, what was your interaction of they already acclaiming that they are from a different world? They are the, eternal, servants of the Lord. So how was the reaction of devotees with Prabhupada when they used to use this and they used to interact with Prabhupada?
That he would say he's...
Like in 4:22 and I think 7:16 or 7:14, Prabhupada states that he is, they are Nitya Siddha, and he confirms that it was by divine arrangement that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and he were destined to meet. And
was a reaction? Well, my reaction was that, as Prabhupada says in the Nectar of Devotion, that devotional service takes place under the jurisdiction of the internal potency. Mahatmanastu mam partha daivim prakritim ashrita. Those who come into devotional service on any level are actually under the protection of the divine nature, whether they're beginners or whether they're very advanced. And that means that there's also a concomitant factor of knowledge. Vasudeve bhagavati bhakti yoga prayojita janaya yashu vairagyam gyanam chayura haitukam. When one is under the protection of the divine nature, of Krishna's divine nature, of his internal potency, then concomitantly knowledge and detachment come. And there's an automatic feeling of that from those. It doesn't have to be done separately. And therefore, there's an intuitive sense and feeling when one takes to devotional service of understanding many of these things. So my reaction was, when I first saw Prabhupada, which was in a Back to Godhead magazine, that I immediately felt that he was from a different world, that he was completely transcendental. I could experience that. And I think all the other devotees did too. So this is, it's a product of actually the fact that devotional service is under the divine nature. So we'll stop there for today and continue the vibration from here outside, taking it door to door to meet people where they live and to give them a warm greeting at their door. Found this is the best way to greet people when they open the door, when we're going door to door. Hi! hi, how are you? And most people are very glad to have some intervention in their life. We noticed the other day when we were in Washington, D.C., going door to door, that it was the general consensus amongst the devotees who I was with on Sankirtan that most people were suffering inside to one degree or another, but most of them to a very high degree. And that our coming there, some of them recognized it, others didn't, but it was a relief. And so we're bringing good tidings door to door, giving information about the spiritual world and connecting people with the internal energy of the Lord. So we'll take the vibration from here and we'll take it outside and we'll spread it to others. And this is very pleasing to Krishna, who says in the Bhagavad Gita that someone who dedicates their activities to that is very dear to him. And if you are in that category of people who are dear to Krishna, what do you have to want for anything? And in your heart or in your life, there'll be nothing lacking. So today we have spots all over the Bay Area available for door-to-door Sankirtan. There's also a couple of Indian stores available, so we'll all be going out, or those who wish to are going out today, and others will be doing other kinds of services throughout the day, all under the internal energy. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Gaur Bhaktivrinda ki. Gopremanande.